Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Bulls. So, believe it or not, and this might be quite hard given the way the past 3 years have worked out, the Brexit bill has actually passed the House of Commons. I think it's the sixth time lucky if you take all the votes that have gone into this bill into account. James, it happened last night, the ping pong, as it's known as, between the Lords and the Commons finished. It's waiting for royal assent and then it will become law. And that's that.
Yes, yeah,
I mean, this is weird, isn't it?
It is. I suppose the one last twist in the tale could be that the Queen turns around and says, actually, I'm not so keen on this. But no, I don't think that's going to happen. I think this is, you know, this now, there is a vote in the European Parliament, but that is, you know, certain to go through. And so we're going to end up in a situation where the UK will leave the EU at the end of this month. And it is remarkable reminder, I think, of how quickly things can happen in the British system when the executive has a majority in Parliament. You know, this Parliament has not been back very long, but this is legislation that has sailed through because the government majority is simply large enough to do whatever it wants. And I think you see the House of Lords adjusting to that new reality. You know, yes, it put some amendments in, it made its point, but then when the Commons stripped them out by big margins, the Lords backed down. And so I think we are seeing here a kind of preview of power that a majority gives the government in a way that we haven't seen. I mean, I don't think any government has really had this power since the 2001 Parliament, because even by 2005, you know, Tony Blair was essentially governing in coalition with a chunk of his own party who were prepared to be difficult and rebellious, whereas Boris Johnson is not in that circumstance.
So, Katie, what now?
Well, ultimately, we're now heading to the trade talk part of the Brexit process. And as we have said many times in this podcast, this is the part in which the government hopes we stop using the B word, stop actually discussing even Brexit as a concept, and ideally probably don't pay too much attention to what's going on in terms of those talks. I don't think that's going to work. I think that even though Number 10 have tried to bring this in-house, you have the Europe unit led by David Frost, it is going to be a big political story. And I think we still need to know exactly the time and the scope of everything they're talking about. So I think that's going to be the next thing to look out for. And there's been talk that there are some EU countries, EU member states, or parts of the Commission that want fishing to be one of the first things that comes up, and the idea that the UK will grant access to fishing waters. Now, this has reminders, I suppose, of, you know, back when David Davis was Brexit Secretary and he said it was going to be the great battle of the summer, the timing of the talks. And then it turned out not to be such a great battle as the government just going along with the EU schedule. So I think we've got to see if there's going to be a similar thing here. But James was talking about the size of the majority, and I think that means that this Number 10 is going to be very... is not going to be so lenient or trying to go with what the EU wants on it. And I also think that if you look at the messages this Number 10 has so far been giving to businesses, so Theresa May would have an approach by which they tried to reassure businesses as much as possible, have meetings, keep businesses on side. I think it was slightly hard to do because there was very little clarity, so businesses found it quite frustrating. I think this Number 10 are much more bullish. So if you look, for example, at one of the rows which is already coming up, which is on immigration, when you look at use of, you know, workers from other countries and what some would say cheap labour. And lots of businesses want that to continue. Theresa May suggested that this would continue past the transition period for a time. Number 10 has suggested that Boris Johnson is going to overturn that. That's not going to happen. And I think that there is more, I think because of the political weight they currently have, there's a sense that this Number 10 are going to try and make sure business dances to their tune rather than trying to appease business in the process. And I think it's going to be one of the themes.
James, one of the stories that's come out from Cabinet, which is now supposed not to leak but still seems to have a few holes in it, is more detail on the post-Brexit immigration plan. So, as Katie said, Priti Patel has told ministers that there will be no carve-outs under the points-based system. Is that not going to backfire in some sectors?
Well, I think there are... Again, lots of this is a question of language, right? If you have a points-based system and you say that the UK needs more people to work in the hospitality industry, so you get points if you're going to work in the hospitality industry, that's not a carve out for the hospitality industry, but you're getting points for working in hospitality. So when is something a carve out and when is something not a carve out? But I think what we see here,
it should be our Saturday podcast.
No, indeed.
Existential.
I think what we see here though is the government moves on immigration. One of the big concerns in Tory circles is, you know, how do voters react when they realise that not that much has changed straight away? So then there are going to be two moments when this happens. The first is going to be February 1st, because the UK will be in a standstill transition. And then the second will be at the start of next year, at the end of that transition period. You know, how much changes then? And I think one of the things that they want to be able to say in January the 1st, 2021, is free movement no longer applies. And I think they think that if they can say that definitively, that is going to be sufficient for, you know, to say to the likes of, you know, those Brexit Party voters who came over to the Tories in the election, you know, look, this is Brexit. This isn't some kind of fake Brexit in name only thing.
And moving on, one of the faces that we did grow very used to during all of these Brexit votes was obviously John Bercow, and he hasn't gone away despite leaving as Speaker. He's got a book out. He won an award at our Parliamentarian Awards last night. He's also on the front page of the Times today, Katie, about bullying allegations.
Yes, so Labour, been reports have put John Bercow up for a peerage, and there's a story today which is basically a complaint has been made against the Commons Speaker by a previous senior advisor relating to allegations of bullying. Now, it's not the first time we've heard allegations of bullying related to John Bercow. If you think back to when there was a Commons report into bullying, ultimately the findings of that independent report was that the institutions of Westminster and the way that Parliament worked, in order to really eradicate the toxic culture which had led to bullying, led to junior staff feeling as though they were threatened in some ways and harassed, you would need to remove certain people from their positions of power, and John Bercow was one of them. Now, at the time, there were some Tory MPs who suggested that this meant he should no longer be in his position. I think there are people who probably didn't like him also before the report saying that. But likewise, there were Labour MPs who, on paper, were against bullying but wanted to keep John Bercow in place. So it was bad news for him at the time, but nothing much came of it materially. I think if you look at John Bercow's response to this, you know, he said that there was ample opportunity for this person to raise issues in the past and they had not done that. And it's almost questioning this as though it's a political timing, suggesting that the allegation is more about the peerage than perhaps a real grievance. I think there are lots of people who are uncomfortable with some of the peerages that are currently being suggested. I think Carrie Murphy, if you look at that as a peerage, people suggest that given there is an investigation into anti-Semitism and that person is linked to that, perhaps that isn't a great candidate. And I think that when you look at the John Bercow situation, I think this is going to add to that sense of why is this person getting there? Will it have an effect? I mean, I think there's a question as in, do Labour want to back someone who has these allegations? But at the same time, there have been allegations before and Labour were pretty happy to say positive things about John Bercow's record on his final day in the chamber and keeping him in there.
James, what do you make of the timing argument that Bercow's put forward today?
I think the timing is obviously is about whether John Bercow should go to the House of Lords or not. But I think it's a mistake to say that kind of somehow invalidates them. Because there is a point here, which is, you know, is this someone you wish to make a legislator for life? And questions of character and temperament are a legitimate part of that discussion. And so I think the appropriate thing to do would actually, rather than Bercow to kind of take this very defensive, you know, let's have an actual proper investigation, make an assessment of the truth or otherwise of what is being said, and then people can decide whether or not he is a fit and proper person to be in the House of Lords.
Now, finally, the husband of Nazanin Zaghari Radcliffe, who has been imprisoned in an Iranian jail, has been meeting with Boris Johnson today, and he has said that his wife is currently being used as a chess piece in a standoff between Britain and the Iranian regime. Katie, can you tell us a bit more about what happened at that meeting?
Yeah, so this is a meeting, I think, that if you look at Nazanin Zaghari Ratcliffe's family and her husband, he's been campaigning very strongly on the issue. They've been pushing through for some time. There was deep frustration at Boris Johnson specifically. It dates back to his time as foreign secretary, where comments he made then affected the length of her sentence. And this is a meeting to see if there was a way forward to a breakthrough. However, I think it's safe to say that we're not expecting something imminent to happen from this. I mean, there's been a suggestion that Richard Ratcliffe has suggested to Boris Johnson that he should be brave in dealing with Iran, you know, and ask for things and take a stand. But I think if you think, I suppose, back to a few weeks ago, and perhaps it's less than that, but when we had the situation between Iran and the US, and Boris Johnson's stance there was to de-escalate as much as possible. Now, I think there have been lots of efforts by the Foreign Office to try and remedy this situation, but there's limited scope. There are certain things they could actually do in terms of money that Iran says that it is owed that it's quite clear the government is not willing to do. So I think it's hard right now to see the route to them getting Nazarene Zorayi Ratcliffe home. And I think the criticism of Boris Johnson, given his record on this, is going to stay. James.
I think your husband is right. She is being treated like a chess piece by the Iranian regime. And they have a pattern of doing this with dual nationals, that you arrest them and then use them as part of your diplomatic arsenal. It is deeply immoral behaviour. But the Iranian regime isn't much troubled by that.
Thank you, James. And thank you, Katie. And if you're interested in all the other winners from our Parliamentarian Awards, which took place last night, do go to Coffee House, where we have pictures and the full list of winners. Thanks for listening.